The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. This week, the election is fast approaching. We'll look at the key races in the battle for control of the 50-50 Senate. Herschel Walker in Georgia.
The people of Georgia need a representative in Washington, which we don't have that right now.
Blake Masters in Arizona.
So many more people would be alive if Mark Kelly and Joe Biden had decided to do anything at all to secure our border.
Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania.
The radical elements of the Democratic Party who have hijacked that party are taking us down this road to lawlessness, and we have to turn that around.
Joe O'Day in Colorado.
Working Americans that made the decision to not go to school, and now they got to pay somebody else's tuition. It's just wrong.
All this and more. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com and follow me on Twitter at Hugh Hewitt. And follow this program as well, please, at Town Hall Review. The election is now less than 10 weeks away. The situation for the president and his party remain bleak. His approval numbers are down. Inflation numbers are up, as are fuel prices. Crime numbers are up as well, especially in our urban centers. Responsible citizens are deeply concerned. So the president and his administration are on a desperate bid to change the narrative before Election Day. I believe the voters know better. The battle for the Senate comes down to a few key races. Herschel Walker is running against incumbent and very far left-wing Raphael Warnock in Georgia. Pastor Warnock has been the subject of much controversy yesterday. Herschel Walker, on the other hand, is surging in the polls. The world-famous running back joined my program earlier this week. We'll pick up with a Biden clip as the president worked to alienate gun owners across the country.
And for those brave right-wing Americans who say it's all about keeping America's independent and safe, if you want to fight against the country, you need an F-15. You need something a little more than a gun.
Now, Herschel Walker, there is scorn in the president's voice. Maybe you didn't hear it, but that's what I heard.
Well, you know, what's so funny is President Biden has been insulting people since he got into office. And it's sad that he don't believe in the unity. You can see that. And he got to try to bring people together. Right now, he's trying to pander to help the left to get votes. And I think they made a huge, huge mistake. You hear in his voice last night and as he was talking about defunding the police. And yet he seemed to have forgotten that the people on the left are the one that did it. People like Senator Warnock, they're the one that did it. The crime on the street is because they decided to go with these judges that were soft on crime. They're the one that did it, but he's making it like it was the people on the right. And it is amazing that we have a president that has forgotten about the things that they have done to this country. And that's the reason come November, we got to get them out of office.
Let me play, Herschel, for you in the audience, President Biden talking about what you're talking about last night, the president in the Pennsylvania rally.
Folks, when it comes to fighting crime, we know it works. Officers on the street who know the neighborhood, not a joke, who know the neighborhood.
It goes on to say we've got to fund the police. I just can't believe anyone forgets that the defund the police movement, along with the George Soros prosecutors, came from the President Biden party.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's what I'm saying. They've gotten so good at that marketing. And I said, that's what we got to remind people. And that, you know, they are the one that came up with this defund the police.
He also talked about fentanyl coming into the country last night and how it's killing people.
For the first time, that was the first time he mentioned it, which is great because they've forgotten all about the border. And that's what's sad. You remember a couple of months ago, everyone was down at the border talking about the border. Right now, just talking about fentanyl, you know, which has become the number one killer of 18 to 40-year-olds. And they've forgotten all about that. This border is a problem. And in Georgia, You know, Georgia not a border state, but yet 70% of the drugs coming into this country from the border go through Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, I did not know that.
Human trafficking and drugs.
I did not know that. So, Herschel, in terms of what people talk to you about the border, what do they want done? What do you promise to help get done as a senator?
Well, one thing that I would promise that I'm going to go and try to close the border and try to get people to come into this country legally, because, you know, you do want people to come in legally, but I will fight to try to close the border and represent the people that of Georgia, because I think the people of Georgia need a representative in Washington, which we don't have that right now from Senator Warnock. He went to Washington to represent the agenda of Joe Biden, and it's not working. But you can see them try to change course right now and pretend they really care. But I want the voters to know they don't care, because if they care, they wouldn't be doing things right now just to pander to get your vote, because that's all they're trying to do is just to get your vote. They're trying to do whatever they can to entice you to vote for them.
Herschel Walker, you alluded to Pastor Warnock's double salary. And if this was a Republican, this is some whataboutism coming at you. If this was a Republican, it would be on the front page of every newspaper every day that Raphael Warnock is taking a full salary from the church that he was the senior pastor for, while he also gets a senatorial salary. It's not a story in the national news media. Why is that?
Well, it's not a story because, you know, the media is not the not my friend. The media is not my friend. It's amazing, you know, today, because I decided to speak the truth. They don't want to be friends with me anymore. They want to write everything great about Senator Warnock. But the guy is a wolf in sheep's clothing. He's not what he's pretending to be. And people are seeing it now. So they're not going to write a bad story about Senator Warnock. Right now, he went to Washington to enrich himself. Right now, he's not what he say he is. And I think people need to expose that. And that's what I want people to know, that I'm going to go to Washington and fight for Georgia, where he went to Washington and fight for Joe Biden. I believe in lower taxes. He believed in higher taxes. He even voted to put men in women's sports. And I asked this simple question, well, you want Herschel Walker to compete against your daughter? Because I said, that's what he voted to do. And I think that's not right.
I'm optimistic about Herschel Walker. He's up, as I said, in a couple of the most recent polls in Georgia. I'm also optimistic about Blake Masters' chances in Arizona. He joined my colleague in Phoenix, Seth Leibson, on AM 960 The Patriot.
What are you hearing from audiences the most? What seems to be the top concern, or what is the top concern in the audiences you're speaking with?
You know, it's really hard to pick, because there's so many things that are on fire right now because of Joe Biden, because of his number one foot soldier in the U.S. Senate, Mark Kelly. Yeah. But I think the twin crises that everybody is just talking about, of course, are the border crisis and the flood of unchecked illegal immigration destroying our state, really harming our country, but then also the economic torpedo that the Democrats have sent. This inflation is out of control. People are struggling to make ends meet. Of course, they just passed the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which normal people, anyone with common sense, knows it's going to make inflation worse, not better. So it's the economic devastation and the failure of law and order with this border crisis. That's what people tell me about. That's why we need to get rid of Mark Kelly, for sure.
Yeah, let me talk to you about those issues in a moment. But let's talk about what you said, water carrier, Joe Biden's chief water carrier, Mark Kelly, in the Senate. It's an odd thing, because he has worked under the radar, affecting all these things on behalf of the Biden administration, and yet is perceived as some kind of moderate. I guess because he's what, just quiet and under the radar? He's with Biden all the time on these things, isn't he?
100%. Or to be specific, more like 97% or whatever it is.
Yeah. So we don't get in trouble. Okay.
Right. Where Biden needs Mark Kelly, Mark Kelly is. It's just that simple. And, you know, they're doing this shtick where, he pretends to be moderate. He pretends to be independent. You've probably seen his very expensive TV commercials, radio commercials. Yeah. He's everywhere, right? He's got the full backing of the whole Democratic machine. And so they're just hoping people buy it. They're just hoping that they can spend enough money to buy an election by pretending that this guy's independent. Actually, he's got a voting record that looks like Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
You know, this is really crazy. And I think people of Arizona, certainly Republicans, but so many independents and even some Democrats, Seth, people are waking up. This guy is not who he says he is.
Let's talk about the merits of some of these issues. Really, demerits, aren't they, Blake? Because I think if you're hearing about the economy and you're hearing about immigration, you're hearing about crime. Your audiences are my audiences. That's what I'm hearing about too. Let's talk about the immigration issue. Where is Mark Kelly on solidifying our border? Where is he on stopping the drug crisis that has obviously been with us for a while, but tremendously accelerated and exacerbated by our lax border policy? Where is he and where are you?
Well, Mark Kelly's nowhere to be found. You know, he voted in lockstep to support Joe Biden's open border policies. He's been doing that for almost 2 years now. And so I remind people, yeah, maybe Mark Kelly's in your living room on your television pretending all of a sudden to be concerned about border security. But you know what? He actually doesn't care because he could have put a stop to all this. Remember, deadlocked, 50-50.
That's right.
Mark Kelly has enormous power as one vote from a border state.
Yep.
He could have put the whole Biden agenda on hold. He could have demanded, Mr. President, you're not getting a single thing from me. Not a single piece of funding, not a single appointee. I won't vote for your agenda unless and until we get some border security, because my people here in Arizona were suffering. Mark Kelly could have done that. He could have stopped this border crisis, and instead, he didn't. He stood idly by. So he's just as complicit as anyone. He's just as complicit as Joe Biden in handing our southwest border over to the drug cartels. Literally, all of this death and pain and destruction, Mark Kelly is as complicit as anyone in making it happen.
Yeah, let's think this through for a moment because, yeah, U.S. Senator representing Arizona obviously has Arizonans at heart and at mind and at the center of their concerns. But you're passing laws for a country and really the world when it comes to foreign and defense policy, too. But what's happening at our border is not staying in Arizona. We are becoming the chief hub of a drug distribution in this country, leading to untold numbers of deaths, over 100,000 drug overdose deaths, poisonings, I call them, last year. We have never seen numbers like this. This is a result of our border policy. Our border policy is a lot of problems, criminal, you name it, international sovereign issues. It's also a health care problem.
That's right. And I've met people whose children have died because of fentanyl overdoses.
Yep.
And many of them tell me, like, isn't this Joe Biden's fault? Isn't this Mark Kelly's fault? And it's, you know, they have tears in their eyes when they say it. And it's like, there's no honest answer except yes, it is. Because so many of these people would not have died. These are American teenagers we're talking about.
That's right.
So many more people would be alive if Mark Kelly and Joe Biden had decided to do anything, anything at all, to secure our border. And instead, it's just this lawless zone. You've got 300,000 illegal aliens coming here every single month. Most of them, of course, you know this, Seth, they're being trafficked.
Yep.
They're being sold to slavery by these international drug cartel organizations, these racketeering organizations. And the fentanyl, it's coming through the border with Mexico, but it's coming from China.
Yep.
Right? China ships all the predicate chemicals for fentanyl into Mexico. They compound them up into the pills, and then it comes north. And so it's China, it's Mexico, these drug cartels are killing our kids, and Mark Kelly and Joe Biden are nowhere to be found.
Coming up, Dr. Oz in the contest in Pennsylvania.
The radical elements of the Democratic Party who have hijacked that party are taking us down this road to lawlessness, and we have to turn that around.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt continues in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. As we continue our look at the key contest for the Senate in November, we'll shift now to Pennsylvania. Pat Toomey, a Republican, succeeded Arlen Specter in this seat. Toomey is retiring. So in a 50-50 Senate, this one's considered a hold. A longtime Republican seat, they want to, they need to, remain Republican. Dr. Mehmet Oz came as in something as an outsider to politics, with all the name recognition that his years on television gave him. He's facing a hard left Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. John Fetterman suffered a heart attack and a stroke even as the votes were being counted. He has yet to appear on anything that resembles a normal campaign cycle and we're not really sure if he can talk and respond to questions. Dr. Oz was a guest on my program. Why, oh, did you ever leave Ohio? I'm a Buckeye, and you went from Ohio to Pennsylvania. I just don't buy that.
You know, my father was training in Ohio, so I only lived in Ohio for a few days. We went right from the hospital to the airport. I grew up just south of Philadelphia, but I ended up going to med school at Penn and business school in Philly as well at Wharton, and it really changed my life. Living in Philadelphia, which at the time was it's a good time for the city. It was safe. I could rode my bike to the hospital. Now you can't do that. Philadelphia has the highest homicide rate it's ever had, highest of any major city, and it's all because of decisions made by radical left prosecutors and the lieutenant governor who I'm running against, who's taken a very firm stance in support of criminals over their victims. And it's sort of stunning to me. If you want to release one-third of all prisoners from jails, you don't believe in life sentences, no matter what you did. You have the passionate desire to legalize all drugs. In Philadelphia right now, we have the largest open-air drug market in the country. People like zombies wandering around, destroying city blocks, criminal activities rampant. The police have been undermined completely. They're demoralized. No one wants to sign up. You don't have enough. I was endorsed by the Fraternal Order of Police recently. It was unanimous. They were so angry about my opponent and his weak on crime, soft on crime positions that have destroyed parts of the Commonwealth. And this is the kind of move that the Democratic Party, the far left part of it, I don't think the average Democrat in any way endorses this, but the radical elements of the Democratic Party who have hijacked that party are taking us down this road to lawlessness, and we have to turn that around.
Now, to the audience, I say contrast my first two questions, one lighthearted, one very serious, Dr. Oz's responses, which he quite well used to get to his core themes, with last night's conversation between my old colleague from NBC, Stephanie Ruhle, and John Fetterman.
How do you serve all Pennsylvania voters? It's a very big state, right? Think about Western PA in Pittsburgh, where the economy was thriving before COVID, filled with tech companies and universities. There's probably all sorts of people there thrilled about student debt forgiveness. But go 30 minutes outside to Beaver County, where there's likely voters who are saying, I just want a good kindergarten. I want a good fifth grade. How do you serve both voters? We've got a complicated economy. People want very different things.
I just think people need to understand what the and be able to recognize, what their lives are really like. And we believe and we know that we actually do that. Very important, too. And, living in Western Pennsylvania, living across the street, actually the way we're having this interview right now, right across from a steel mill. We have to understand that we all can't work at Google or we can't all be working at a hospital. We have to make sure that we are making more stuff here in Pennsylvania and in America. And we also have to make sure that we address to an obscene minimum wage. And how can we now, running for the Senate and you own 10 homes and you are not unwilling to raise a minimum wage above $7.25 an hour?
All right. So, Dr. Oz, that is a non-responsive answer to a convoluted question that contained the answer to the question and was basically a gimme. I know you have sympathy for stroke victims. You're a heart surgeon, for goodness sake. What did you make of that exchange in that interview last night?
I have been saying for 2 months now, when I realized that John Fetterman wasn't leaving his home, he never answered a question on the campaign trail, still to this day has not answered a question on the campaign trail. That was the first interview he's done. He also has denied the debates that I've agreed to. These are debates, five of them offered by major media companies. And I think that answer reveals one of the reasons. He has a very difficult time talking about policy. Now, this is evident prior to his stroke. It's not new. He likes to just attack people as individuals, but he won't actually address the problems that people are facing in their homes. So if I'm trying to make sense of this, I'd say, listen, John Fetterman, I'm a physician who has tremendous compassion for what it's like to recover from a stroke. I will work with you in any way possible. But if the real reason that you're not appearing on a debate stage has nothing to do with your health, but actually is all about the fact you don't want to own your radical left positions that you have taken throughout your career, and the deeper pathology that's evident when you look at why you believe these things are the case, that's a separate issue, and you have to address that.
Joe O'Dea is a surprise leader in Colorado against incumbent Democrat Michael Bennett. Bennett, of course, votes right along with Biden on everything. The debt plan is not popular in Colorado. Joe O'Dea joined me on my program. What do you think of the student loan forgiveness?
Well, I'd be honest with you, it's not forgiveness, it's a transfer. I mean, who's paying for it? Working Americans. That's who's going to end up paying the bill.
I went to a safety meeting at my company, had about 40 employees there the other morning, and was asking them how they felt about paying somebody else's tuition. I didn't know if I was going to get out of there alive, Hugh. They're really upset. This is working Americans that made the decision to not go to school, and now they got to pay somebody else's tuition. It's just wrong. It's just wrong at every level.
This is so unconstitutional as well as being so unfair.
I'm sure they're gonna have a vote on it in Congress. Somebody's gonna stop this. But it's just outrageous that Biden thinks he can get away with this, and it's pandering to voters. I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing. Here we are, 60 days out from an election, and he's giving away money trying to garner up some votes.
So Michael Bennett is your opponent, the invisible senator. He kind of tried to distance himself, sort of, from the president's program on student loans. The president didn't even mention it in Pennsylvania on Tuesday night. He's embarrassed by it. Are you going to debate Michael Bennett? Because you're going to win that debate on the issues. He votes with Joe Biden every single time he votes.
Yeah, we've reached out. We've challenged him to, I think, four or five different places that we said we'd meet him. Heck, I'll meet him at a bar downtown Denver. Let's get it on and talk about the issues. And that's what working Americans here in Colorado want to hear. They want to talk about what we're going to do about inflation. They want to talk about what we're going to do about price of gas, price of milk, price of groceries. They want to know what's going to happen with this crime that's out of control here. And I've challenged them, but it's been crickets.
Let's talk about the crime in Denver. Denver is a problem when it comes to going downtown. When I was there 5 years ago, it was even a little bit sketchy then. But now I understand it's really quite bad.
Well, COVID's done a number on the businesses downtown, and a lot of them have left. And the reason they've left is because it's not safe. And they don't want to come back until we get some things in place. We got a border that's leaking like a sieve. We got record numbers of fentanyl, human trafficking, and drug cartels coming straight up I-25, and they're in our neighborhoods now. They're killing our kids. We've lost 1,700 Colorado kids here in the last year to fentanyl and meth. It's unprecedented, and we've got to do something. Biden and Bennett, they got it wrong. We've got to close this border down and get crime under control.
Last question, Joe O'Day. I loved it the first time you came on. You said you employed 300 Colorado families. Democrats noticed that. They tried to take you out in the primary. They don't want to run against a job creator. Are you hanging on to that message? Are you telling people you created jobs? Michael Bennett is killing them?
You bet. I mean, the Democrats create dependency. We've been creating opportunity for years, and that's what we'll continue to do. They're coming after my company next. They've already started bashing us. Pick on me. Don't pick on my company.
Coming up, California votes to ban new gas car sales by 2035.
These are global bureaucrats essentially deciding how we're going to live on the premise that the earth can't handle it unless they take over our lives and make these decisions for us.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Stay with us.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. It's a look at today's most compelling stories and provides responses from key conservatives in media and politics. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to daybreakinsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's daybreakinsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's daybreakinsider.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. California votes to ban new gas car sales by 2035. That was the recent headline from CNN on a decision by my old home state to go all in on electric. Two things worth pointing out. The vote was not by elected representatives, but by the unelected, the appointed members of the California Air Resources Board. And it's true. What happens in California does not stay in California. Mark Morano of Climate Depot joined Chris DeGaulle on AM 990 The Answer in Philadelphia.
How about a trigger law for, it's so funny, we talk about the Roe versus Wade trigger law stuff. How about trigger laws for gas-powered cars?
I mean, what's happening in California, I call the great car reset. Because Gavin Newsom did an executive order, and then an unelected board of bureaucrats decreed this in California. The legislator, there was no vote on this. There was no petition drive or anything like that. These are bureaucrats deciding that the gas-powered car will no longer be sold. Now, you mentioned the other two states. Well, there's actually about 10 other states beyond those that may follow suit. The problem is that California sells 10% of all cars. So automakers take notice of this. And here's the real problem. They're never going to be able to ban the car in that short of a time, even if they wanted to, but it will create vehicle shortages. We're looking at a situation right now where they can't even get the rare earth mining ramped up and the chips and everything to get up so you can only buy this. All they're going to do is make a massive used car field for gas-powered cars. And we're going to end up a little bit like Cuba, where you see all those old 1950s cars driving around. California is creating a Cuban paradise by essentially banning the sale of new cars and only mandating one car for you. And then the used car market's going to go bonkers if they actually go through with this.
And then, Mark, to your book's title, The Great Reset, who controls the price of electricity? Why do they want us all in electric cars so bad?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, there's no way they can ramp them to scale. So use another example, East Germany. If you remember the old East German Trabant made by the East German government, people would be on waiting lists for 2, 4, 6, 7 years for these little cars that, you know, when they came, they were a nightmare. Well, the problem here is they not only can they not meet this, but this is not any green or eco-friendly way to go. An electric car requires fossil fuels to make. Electric cars dig the earth, and I don't mean in a 1970s groovy Brady Bunch way. I mean they excavate deeply for rare earth mining, for cobalt in Africa, for lithium in South America, and Chinese-controlled mines. So all we're doing is essentially just transferring environmental impact to other areas of mining instead of emissions. And we're putting more reliance on China, and these cars come here, and then we plug them in, and we're recharging on fossil fuels anyway. And then you have issues with recycling, with range, with cost. And it's, again, the biggest problem I have, and it goes to the title of my book, The Great Reset. These are global bureaucrats essentially deciding how we're going to live on the premise that the earth can't handle it unless they take over our lives and make these decisions for us and tell us we can no longer buy a gas-powered car.
And aren't we inherently more controllable, Mark, when we're all reliant on plugging our cars in?
Very good point, Chris. That's one of the things I talk about in the book. In fact, it was West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin who pointed out that when Henry Ford did the mass production of the Model T, and they immediately sprang up across the country, all these mom-and-pop independently owned gas stations. There was no federal centralized control of gas in that regard. Well, fast forward, the Biden administration wants to put in a federally produced, controlled national charging grid for electric cars all over the country. They're going to plan where to put it. These are going to be kind of like your DMV of chargers, right? Your government agency. Well, think about that. The next time there's a pandemic, the next time government wants a lockdown or stay at home orders, all they got to do is flip a switch and turn off the national charging grid. That's a scary thought, especially in a post-COVID world.
Do you think the public health emergency stuff was a trial run? Was that a one and done, you know, pandemic once in a 100-year thing? Or do you think that the COVID situation, I mean, clearly Democrats want to run from it. They don't, you know, Fauci's announced he's retired. And although Biden keeps showing up in masks periodically, which is weird. Monkeypox. Some people are convinced the monkeypox thing is still going to be out there looming as a great danger that warrants more control. Where do you come down on that?
It comes down to these emergency decrees. It is not a one-off, as you say, not even close. What emergency powers and lockdowns gave them was the once free West now has the ability to rule like China. They can shut down and do whatever they want. This is why Jane Fonda calls COVID God's gift to the left, because they were able to achieve that dream of Chinese one-party rule in the once free West.
Coming up.
If they really wanted to prosecute this case, they would have waited to do the warrant.
Andrew McCarthy on the raid on Mar-a-Lago. When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
As the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy enters our 25th anniversary year, we've remained committed to a single truth of world history, that ideas have consequences.
to understand these ideas and their impact on today's politics, and to test them quantitatively, requires the unique curriculum we offer on our Malibu, California campus. Apply now for fall classes at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The raid on Trump's residence in Mar-a-Lago has fueled a host of concerns about two standards of justice within the 21st century FBI. Whatever you or I, left or right, may think about the heavy-handedness of the approach and whether or not it was warranted at this time in the year in this election season, we have learned a little more about the document dispute this week. Andrew McCarthy joined Seth Leibson in Phoenix.
A magistrate judge signs off on a search warrant. Is that kosher in and of itself, a magistrate judge doing that?
Yes. So magistrate judges, I'm glad you asked because there's a lot of confusion about this. They're not presidential appointees. Right. They're not, as we say, Article III judges. Right. You know, they're not district court or appellate court or Supreme Court justices. They are appointees of the court. They work for, they're picked by the judges. They work for the judges. They're allowed to, their main job is actually to, you know, these judges all have enormous civil dockets, and their main job is to, like, referee discovery disputes and civil litigation, which is an enormous job. But one of the things they're allowed to do is sign search warrants.
Okay. So I have seen backs and forth on that, and, you know, my criminal law background is nearly non-existent compared to what I used to do in civil law. The Presidential Records Act, speaking of criminal law, is there a criminal penalty available here?
No, it's not criminal law at all. But, you know, it's interesting what they've done here, Beth. So the Presidential Records Act covers all of the president's materials, which really aren't the president's. They used to be up until the Carter administration.
Right.
But when the Congress enacted the Presidential Records Act, they changed the assumption. So presidential records are the property of the United States, meaning the government. Mm-hmm. They are not the property of the president, which is a very important distinction here. But as you point out, when Congress enacted this, they didn't put any criminal law teeth in it. The idea was that this was going to be worked out to the extent there were disputes between the president and the National Archives. And what they've done here is they have a criminal statute, Section 2071, which was enacted after the Presidential Records Act, that makes it a crime to remove or conceal or, like, convert to your own use any government record.
Okay.
And what they've tried to do is stitch that statute to the Presidential Records Act so that it now has the criminal enforcement that Congress obviously didn't intend for it to have when they pass it. And you can't say, Seth, by the way, that Congress wasn't thinking about this because this was a Watergate statute.
Right.
So, you know, obviously there was criminal liability that was a, you know, potential, and Congress elected when they passed this legislation not to put criminal law provisions in it.
Not that I need to reference it, but just to be clear that we're talking about the same thing. This statute, what did you call it, 2071?
That's a penal statute.
Okay.
Yeah, that's in the U.S. Penal Code. It's separate and different from the Presidential Records Act. But the two-part step that they do here is, number one, the Presidential Records Act means that all of the documents that Trump has are ours, meaning the government.
Okay.
And number two, if you take any government record and remove it from its where it's supposed to be or conceal it, that's a crime under Title 18, which is the penal code.
Right.
That's Section 2071. So that's the two steps.
And is that the main criminal statute for the basis of the search warrant, would you gather? Or?
Yeah, well, I don't think if it was just presidential records, I doubt they would have done this. I think that the classified information is what they're mainly concerned about, and that's really the Espionage Act.
Right, our old friend, the Espionage Act.
Yeah,
not good.
Yes.
Yeah, remember we spent a lot of
didn't
time on that in 05.
Didn't you and I jointly write something on the Espionage
Act?
Like a million years ago?
Yeah, we really did. I think you and I may have even co-authored a piece that beat up on Mike Pence a little bit, but he was very good about it, if I'm not mistaken, back in the day when he was in the House of Representatives. But so with that criminal statute, the Espionage Act, and this other 2071, does it appear like, I mean, obviously we're nowhere near completion here, but facially, does it look like perhaps the elements have been met?
I think it's fair to argue that there's, you know, look, they had reason to think there was classified information there, and they found it. Mm-hmm. So, did they have probable cause for the warrant? Yes. The reason I don't think that means they're going to prosecute is they're fighting awfully hard, Seth, to not turn over the information in the affidavit.
Yeah.
And in a normal criminal case, you do the searches at the end when you make arrests.
Yep.
And everybody does that with the expectation that the affidavits are going to be turned over to the defense in discovery and eventually become public documents.
Right.
So it seems to me that it doesn't make sense for them to be fighting this hard to conceal this information if in a couple of weeks they're just going to charge this guy and all of it becomes discoverable anyway. So I think, you know, they're taking into account the fact that classified information cases are really hard to do in the best of circumstances. Here you would be dealing with a defendant who is the only official in government who has the ability to declassify things, so it makes it a much more difficult criminal case. And I think they just wanted their stuff back. I mean, if they really wanted to prosecute this case, they would have waited to do the warrant because they would know the warrant was going to be, you know, the warrant and the underlying papers are going to be disclosed to the defense and become public. They're acting like they hope this never becomes public.
Now that they have the records, maybe just drop everything. Is that in the cards?
Yeah.
Is that a smart move? Is that not a smart move?
That's my view of it. I think that what they were really trying to accomplish here, Seth, is a couple of things that are very important. One is to get the information back. And then secondly, we should say why it was important to get the information back. It's true that government does overclassify things.
Yeah, sure.
But at the same time, the stuff that's of the highest level of classification, and there's reason to believe there was at least some of that here, whenever there's a possibility that top secret information fell into the wrong hands, that it was seen by people who shouldn't have seen it, that like maybe somebody who works for the Russians has infiltrated Mar-a-Lago and had access and took pictures of stuff and all that stuff, the intelligence community has to assume that, you know, covers may have been blown.
Sure.
And then you have to worry, do we have to pull informants out? Are people's lives in danger?
Sure.
Is there some sensitive intelligence gathering method that we have that's been blown? And was it blown 3 months ago such that, like, the Chinese have been feeding us misinformation or disinformation for, you know, this period of time? So until they have the documents back and can account for everything that might have been seen by somebody who wasn't authorized to see it, they can't really do a full security assessment to see how we may have been compromised. And being able to do that, the FBI and the intelligence community, is much more important than whether they can prosecute Trump or not.
Coming up, one possible problem researchers found with the income-driven repayment plan is that students may be incentivized to borrow more money.
Dennis Prager on the debt forgiveness debacle in the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Georgine Rice. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. With the elections looming, President Biden makes his case prime time.
The MAGA Republicans don't just threaten our personal rights and economic security. They're a threat to our very democracy.
We'll take a look at Biden's very controversial debt forgiveness problem.
If we're saying the state comes along and pays our school debt, and we're using the gospel as the analogy, we're saying essentially the state is Jesus.
We'll get analysis from Albert Mohler.
President Biden's not going to pay a penny of all of this. Rather, the American taxpayer will.
We'll look at a Christian college in the courts over their conviction to operate their institution according to Christian conviction.
This has really come to a head in the last 10 years because of the LGBT movement.
Be sure to join us and visit our website at ChristianOutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. $300 billion. That's the figure we've heard over and over again from the administration as they sought to quantify just how much the giveaway from the president to people owing money on student loans could cost. But it turns out the price tag may actually be much higher than that. Here's Dennis Prager.
According to University of Penn Wharton School, the Biden school plan could exceed $1 trillion. Did you know, I did not know until I read this article, but there's a provision that there's a cap of loan repayment at 5% of the borrower's income? That's why they say it could reach $1 trillion. One possible problem researchers found with the income-driven repayment plan is that students may be incentivized to borrow more money. Yes. The college-government complex. The more people who attend college, the more Democrats they get. Do you know that college education may now be more reliable than illegal immigrants for the Democratic Party? A lot of people have thought that the agenda of allowing millions upon millions of people to illegally enter the country is a political one, and it is. They do believe that these people are more reliably Democrat than the indigenous population of Americans. However, the really reliable group are the college-educated. The completely reliable group are those who went to graduate school. And the most reliable group, I suspect, has generally been Black America. It's been the most reliable group for Democrats. What do they vote in? It's over 90%, correct? Is that right? Over 90% of the Black vote is Democrat? The Biden administration's student loan debt cancellation plan may cost more than $1 trillion, according to analysis from the University of Pennsylvania's Penn Wharton budget model. The largest potential cost driver, Penn Wharton identified, is the Biden administration's new income-driven repayment plan, which includes capping monthly student loan payments at 5% of a borrower's discretionary income, and reforming the repayment guidelines to guarantee that no borrower who makes, quote, about the annual equivalent of a $15 minimum wage will have to make monthly loan payments. Debt cancellation alone will cost the United States up to $519 billion, Wharton found in an analysis published Friday. Loan forbearance, which allows borrowers to temporarily stop paying, will cost an estimated $16 billion. The income-driven repayment plan will initially cost $70 billion. The report comes as the United States national debt is already more than $30.8 trillion, according to the Treasury.
Thank you for joining us today. Town Hall Review is part of the Salem Podcast Network. If you haven't signed up for our podcast yet, why not take a minute to do so? Go to townhallreview.com. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producer David Pouchon, Michael Cook, Tim Gantner, Adam Ramsey, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.